3, we're studying the peace offering. Scriptures for the peace offering, if you want to write these down. We're not going to do a lot of reading. We're going to do a lot of writing today. So if you want to put a section there to write these down, Leviticus 3, 1 through 17. Leviticus chapter 7, 11 through 34. Chapter 7, 11 through 34. Leviticus 19, verses 5 through 8. Leviticus 22, verses 21 through 25. Numbers 15, 2 through 16. And Deuteronomy chapter 12, verses 5 through 14. So if you didn't get them, the first ones are in Leviticus 3, 1 through 17, chapter 7, 11 through 34, chapter 19, 5 through 8, chapter 22, 21 through 25, Numbers 15, 2 through 16, and Deuteronomy 12, 5 through 14. These will be some of the verses that deal with the peace offering. First point on your study guide, what is the Hebrew word that is translated peace offering and what does it mean? The word is shalem, S-H-E-L-E-M, shalem, S-H-E-L-E-M. It comes from the root word shalom. The word shalem simply means to make up, to supply that which is lacking, wanting, or deficient. The peace offering also by some is called the offering of completion, and you'll understand that as we study this passage of Scripture. The peace offering lets us know that atonement leads to reconciliation with God. And reconciliation with God leads to fellowship between God and man. So there's the basic idea of the peace offering. You will see that as you study it, it was the most joyful of all the sacrifices. It is a sweet savor sacrifice. In this sacrifice, you'll see that the fat of the animal is all that is fumed unto God. It is all that is burned upon the altar of burnt offering. Just the fat of the animal. And this is called food or bread for God. Leviticus 3, 10 through 11. The fat of the animal is all that is burned upon the altar of burnt offering. And remember, in the sweet savor sacrifice, the word burn is olah, which means to fume or to incense. The rest of the animal is given to man, and it is called food for man. So two ingredients of the peace offering. You have food for God, and you have food for man. And it is to be eaten in the courtyard of the tabernacle. It is to be eaten in the house of God. Deuteronomy 12, 7 and 17 makes it very clear. Deuteronomy 12, 7 through 17. All right, point number two on your study guide. What is the main objective of this sacrifice? When God and man have fellowship with one another, then they have a banquet or communion or a fellowship meal. The thrust of the peace offering is a festive banquet. It is a joyful occasion in which God and man eat together. It celebrates the happy fellowship that is between God and man. Man has peace with God, and God is friends, has friends with mankind. In this sacrifice, and as I've said throughout this study, ritual is more than just a physical act. It's more than something ceremonial. And you'll see this as we study these rituals of this sacrifice. Because even though the man supplies the animal, God is seen as hosting this memorial or this fellowship meal, this festive banquet. God is seen as hosting this festive banquet. No man who is not in fellowship with God dares to partake of the peace offering. Point number three, very quickly, the peace offering is of ancient usage. Tongue got in the way there, sorry. It's been done before. Although it's not specifically called a peace offering, it is implied. Genesis 31:54, Jacob and Laban enjoy a festive meal. Exodus 18, verse 12, Jethro with Aaron, Moses, and the elders of Israel. So Genesis 31, 54, Exodus 18, 12. And other passages of Scripture where it's indicated and yet not stated. Now, point number four in your study guide.
Question.
Yes. In fellowship with God, dares to partake of the peace offering.
That's expanded on in chapter 7, but it also says something about eating on the first day, and then something about the second day, and the third day it had to be burned. Was that burned on the altar as a continuing part of the sacrifice, or was it burned elsewhere?
It's burned elsewhere. We're getting into that right now. It's okay. I enjoy initiative. Three types of peace offering. Three types of peace offering. There is the thank offering. The thank offering. This is the Hebrew word horah. H-O-R-A-H. It is also called a praise offering. A praise offering. There are some to think that from the word hurrah is where we get our word hooray. So that's the thank offering. B, the second type of offering is a vow offering. A vow offering. This is the Hebrew word neder. N-E-D-E-R. For the thank offering, the passage of scripture is Leviticus 7, 11 through 14. B, the vow offering is Leviticus 7, 16. And the third one is the free will sacrifice, which is also Leviticus 7, 16, Judges 20, verse 26, 2 Samuel 24, verse 25. The Hebrew word is Nidabah, N-I-D-E-B-A-H.
What was 2 Samuel?
24, 25. Point number five, the animals used. The animals used in the peace offerings is of the herd or of the flock. Of the herd, which would mean cattle, of the flock would be sheep and goat.
Male or female?
It doesn't matter, either one. No birds. No birds in this offering. And the reason why this is a banquet, not a dinner you get at Kentucky Fried Chicken. Not enough meat on a bird for a banquet.
Wasn't birds forbidden to be cooked at that time?
No birds.
I know, but I mean, by law, I think it was illegal to cook birds at that time.
I don't know. I mean, all, birds were offered in some of the offerings.
Right, I mean, to be honest.
It would have to go underneath the clean and unclean animals.
Right.
And I'm not real sure about that. I do know from seeing some of you guys grab the fried chicken at a fellowship meal, no bird is big enough for a banquet. It is one of your favorites, but everybody gets it before me. All right. The thank offering, and this is to Troy's point, the thank offering must be eaten on the first day. Must be eaten on the first day. Leviticus 3:1 seems to indicate, and I'm saying seems to indicate, I'm not sure about this, but seems to indicate that it was from the thank offering was from the cattle or from the herd only. I'm not sure about that. So put an exclamation point that I'm right and a question mark that I may be wrong. It must be eaten on the first day. Now this would indicate, now if I'm correct in this, this would indicate that the thank offering is a huge banquet because it must be eaten on the first day, and if not, it's burned outside the camp. It must be burned outside the camp. Any remains or leftovers are burned outside the camp. The scriptures on that, Leviticus 7, verse 15, and 22, verse 29 through 30. The vow and the free will offering. We're on point number five on your study guide. The vow and the free will offering could be eaten on the second day. Could be eaten on the second day. Leviticus 19 and verse 7 says that it is an abomination to eat of this offering on the second day. On the third day, excuse me. Vow and free will offering could be eaten on the second day. 19 verse 7 of Leviticus says it's an abomination to eat on the third day. And that may be perhaps because flesh starts to see corruption on the third day. Of all the offerings of the peace offering, the thank offering, the vow offering, and the free will offering, the thank and vow offering must have an animal without blemish. The free will offering can't have an animal that is blemished. Leviticus 22, verses 22 through 24. As long that it does not take away from the food value. An animal that is blind, broken, maimed, sword, scurvy, scabbed, or has been castrated cannot be offered as a thank offering. Leviticus 22, 25 also tells us no one out of fellowship, and that means not in covenant relationship with God, can partake of this peace offering. Only those who are in covenant relationship. And that seems, and to me, I've struggled with this, that seems to indicate covenant relationship means had to be of the nation of Israel. No foreigners. And I'm not sure about that. I'm still studying that. Question number 6 on your study guide, the stages of ritual. And if I get lost, bear with me. I'm going to try and keep up. The stages of rituals. Point A under 6, the presentation. The presentation. It is the same as the burnt offering. The worshiper brings the animal to the tent of meeting. In the burnt offering, you remember, the whole animal is given. The animal represents the worshiper and says, I consecrate my life unto you, your service, your will, my whole life. The whole offering and the burnt offering is burned upon the altar. In the peace offering, the animal represents the worshiper in the sense of it expresses a desire to enjoy fellowship with God and to participate in this fellowship banquet. So point A is the fellowship. And from this point onward, the animal belongs to God. Point B under 6, the stage of rituals, the laying of hands upon the animal. Remember, this is the Hebrew word samach, which means simply to lean heavily upon. This is a transfer of guilt or sins. Now remember, in the sweet savor sacrifices, sins are unspecific. Atonement is marginal. The laying on of hands in the peace offering simply indicates that it involves knowledge of the worshiper of his imperfection to in service and in worship to God. That's all it is. Atonement, again, is marginal. In the sweet savor sacrifices, atonement is marginal. Point C, the killing of the victim by the worshiper. The killing of the victim by the worshiper. It carries the same idea as the burnt offering. In other words, God is educating the Jew here that he is responsible for the animal's death.
When you say worshiper, are you talking the priest who did the killing?
The worshiper, the offerer, the man who brings the animal to there. He presents it before God. He, the worshiper, lays his hand upon the head of the animal, transferred symbolically of guilt. And then he cuts or kills the animal.
Now, everybody would do this. In other words, a whole group of people would do this. It'd be a lot of meat.
It would be the head of the family who was in this banquet. If it was a thank offering, large gathering, it would be the what we would call head of the family, patriarch or whatever. It wouldn't be just everybody.
So it would only be one family doing this at a time, not a multiple families.
One family and all that was in his household. If he had 500 slaves, they would be there too, as long as they were in covenant relation. Point D, the sprinkling of blood. This is the priest. This is the word Zarak, Z-A-R-A-Q, Zarak. which does not mean sprinkle, but literally to splash. Literally to splash. And this is around the base of the altar. Verse 2 seems to indicate all around the altar. And once again, where the blood is sprinkled indicates the margin of expiation that is needed. Sweet savor sacrifices, atonement is marginal. It's always around the base of the altar. Point E, and there's three parts here. Point E, all the fat is removed and fumed unto God on the altar. All the fat is fumed, and, removed and fumed unto the unto God on the altar. Chapter 3, 11, 16, 21, 6, and 8. Number 1 under E, this is God's portion. This is God's portion. The fat of the animal in the peace offering is God's portion. In the burnt offering, the whole animal was offered upon the altar of burnt offering. In the peace offering, just the fat is fumed. Number 2 under E, God claims all the fat from all sacrifices. If you'll notice in verse 9 of chapter 3, it talks about the fat tail. I've been told that there is a specific brand of sheep in the eastern country that has a very fat tail that can weigh up to 15 pounds. This would be on there. And number 3, to help us understand this, is to let us know that the best and richest part belongs to God. In the Bible, fat at times stands as a symbol of abundance and riches. In animals, it is a sign of health and vigor. List of scriptures that will give you the symbolic value of fat very quickly. Genesis 45, 18. 27, verse 28. Deuteronomy 32, 15. And Paul will use this in Romans 11 and verse 17. The Gentiles being grafted into the root of the fatness of the olive tree. Those are some of the scriptures that are used. All the fat is given to the Jehovah. Now in this ritual, the Israelite is being educated that God gets the best of the animal. God gets the best of the animal. All right. Point F. The distribution of the sacrificial animal. The animal is now divided up for the sacrificial meal. Point 1, the wave breast is removed. The wave breast is removed. Leviticus 7, 31, also verses 34 and 36. Aaron and his sons are not directly participants in the ceremonial meal, but they do get their part. So the wave breast is removed, and it's probably the right breast. It is the right breast.
Based on
assumption. When,
I didn't see a left-right specification to get to the thigh.
Yeah. Based on assumption, you know. When Aaron and his sons were consecrated, right ear, right thumb, right toe. in the judgment scene, this separating the sheep and goats. Sheep's right, goats left. So it's just assumption. Nothing concrete on there. If I gave a test and you said you didn't know, I'd still fail you, but you'd be right. Now I'm lost. B, waving is done by the worshiper and the priest. Waving is done by the worshiper and the priest. You'll read different things of how this is done. Some say the worshiper will put his hands on top of the wave breast and the priest will do it on the bottom. Or some say like this. Both will have one hand up, one hand under. Point C, with the hand upon the breast, the priest and the worshiper wave the breast towards the altar repeatedly, 2-3 times at least, towards the altar. That's point C. Point D, this signifies that the breast belongs to the altar, thus it belongs to God. So D says the waving signifies that the breast belongs to the altar, therefore to God. E, thus it is God seen as giving the breast to the breast portion to the priest and his family. Not the worshiper. Once again, understand the symbolic here of the rituals. Point F. This is taken home by the priest. Remember, the priests are not participants in the fellowship banquet. So they take their portion home. It's only those who are participating in the banquet that eat in the courtyard of the tabernacle. Number two, under F. I told you there'd be a lot of writing. Do I need to slow down some? Okay. All right. Number two under F. This is 2A. The heave thigh is removed and given to the officiating priest. The wave breast was removed and given to the priest and his family. The heave thigh is removed and given to the officiating priest. 7, verse 32 through 33. Point B. In the same manner of the wave breast, as far as holding it, either or under, it is then heaved towards heaven repeatedly. Not towards the altar, but towards heaven. This is point B. The thigh is heaved towards heaven. And this is to show that it was God's. Point C. This shows God, not the worshiper, as the giver of the heave thigh to the officiating priest. Point D, to let you know the reason for all this, Deuteronomy 18 and verse 2, The Levite has no inheritance. The Levite has no inheritance among their brethren. They didn't have any land. They didn't have any place to raise crops. Joshua 13 and verse 14 tells us that Jehovah is their inheritance. So God is the supplier of the priest. So this makes you understand a little bit of the wave breast and the heave thigh and the reason for the ritual. To the altar shows that it belongs to God, given to the priest. To heaven to show that it comes from God and given to the priest, not from the worshiper. Everybody clear on that?
Joshua
13, verse 14, I believe it is, if I can read my writing. Let me double check it. I've had to double check a couple of things. Yeah, Joshua 13, 14. Only unto the tribe of Levi he gave no inheritance. The offerings of Jehovah, the God of Israel, made by fire are his inheritance, as he spake unto him. So this is where they got their offering. And point E, this practice is the same as in the meal offering. As you remember, when they brought the meal offering, the priest reached in there and got his portion out of the meal offering before the offering is given on the altar of burnt offering. Any questions up to this point? Yes, sir.
Two things. First, what signifies or what creates this? What makes it a peace offering, Jewish-wise, and how often would it be done?
Okay, it could be done at any time. Anytime. What makes it a peace offering is just simply an identification of the Jew to show a desire to have a fellowship meal with God. This is what it is. To show that he was in not only fellowship with him, but wanted to have a closer and a more intimate, I guess, communion with him. And this is how it was symbolic. That's about the best way I can answer that, because it is symbolic. Of course, we know God's not sitting there putting out the tables and stuff like that. But it is just an idea that I'm in fellowship with you. I want to have a closer, more intimate relation or meal with you. And that's why it's done in the courtyard. You will read in pagan times that pagans would have a feast in their house, and they would invite gods into their house, and symbolically, of course. But here in the peace offering, it is seen as God inviting his people, or his covenant relationship, whoever's in relationship with his people, into his house for a fellowship meal. And there's a lot of New Testament passages, which we won't get to this week, we will get to next week, that'll help us understand this symbolism of the peace offering. That's next week. Yes, sir.
Somewhere in my mind, I'm recalling something about Jewish tradition regarding the right thigh later on towards New Testament times, and that tradition being based on Jacob wrestling his thigh being put out.
I think that's Genesis 35, 32.
But I couldn't find any New Testament scriptural reference to that tradition.
And you probably won't. And like I said, it's based on assumption. Okay? Don't get hung up on it. You know, assumption's bad Bible study. And every once in a while I do bad Bible study.
Well, the reason I question the whole thing in Genesis, it doesn't specify which thigh.
No, it just says that, therefore the children of Israel eat not of the sinew of the hip, which is upon the hollow of the thigh until this day, because he touched the hollow of Jacob's thigh and the sinew of the hip. I don't know if that has any significance to that at all, Troy. I really don't. you know, I'll try and get into it a little bit deeper if I can, but I don't think we're going to find anything to it. And like I said, I'm just going from the right because of the other things that we see on the right. Right ear, right thumb, right toe, right hand, left hand. Any other questions? All right, let's see. Let's finish up with point three of the stages of rituals under six. The rest of the sacrifice is given by God to the offerer. Remember, at the moment of presentation, the animal is then seen as belonging to God. So, number three under question number six. The rest of the sacrifice is given by God to the offerer, minus the fat, the wave breast, and the heave thigh. Point A, the place of the banquet is in the house of God. Deuteronomy 12:5-7 says it is before Jehovah. The phrase before Jehovah always indicates the tabernacle. Point B, this is clarified, this stipulation is clarified in Deuteronomy chapter 12, verses 17 through 18, where he says that the peace offering is not to be eaten in your home or in your gate, between in your gates. The meal was to be eaten in the house of God. Point C, the wine. This was ordained to prove that God was the provider. This is point C. This was ordained to prove that God was the provider. And the one who is participating in the meal is seen as his guest in his house. And it stands to reason, like I said, according to pagan practice, if the Israelite had took it to his house, not only would it have been abomination, but it would seem as God being his guest. And the thrust of this sacrifice is to show that God is throwing a celebrate banquet for his people in his covenant fashion. The high priest and the officiating priest do not participate, so they're able to take their portion of the sacrifice home. Point D. The offerer is now recognized as standing before God in fellowship and sitting at his table. Sitting at his table. In Isaiah 65, verse 11, just write this down, the verse down, and read it later for yourself. It condemns those who prepare a table for fortune and to fill up wine unto destinies, and these are both pagan deities. So there's condemnation there of the practice being at home. And then point E, the final point. And I'll stop here, so I know some of your hands are starting to cramp up. Those who eat of this banquet in the house of God are the worshiper, the wife, sons, daughters, man and maid servants, any Levite within his gate. Deuteronomy 12:18. The sojourner, the fatherless, and the widow within his gate. Deuteronomy 16 and verse 11.
Well, if an atheist, or not an atheist, but if he was of another nationality other than Jewish, he couldn't be Christian.
That's what it seems to me. And I'm struggling with that.
Because I was just thinking of slaves of the family.
Yeah. And then that, if it had to be somebody in covenant relation and they were not of the Israeli faith, heritage, had to be a proselyte, I would assume. I don't know, okay? This is something I'm going to have to really look into, because the word sojourner, plenty of people were sojourning, caravans and stuff like that. And they may have business associates that would stay with them, much like we do today. So, but from what I read and from the understanding, it looks like the sojourner had to be one in covenant relation. But I'm not sure about that.
What my understanding was that it had to be, the head of the family had to be the believer, and the rest of them didn't have to, you know, was a believer, but didn't have to be a Jewish faith.
Yeah, I understand that argument, but I do see passages of Scripture that indicate that it has to be those in covenant fashion. So, I mean, you know, it's just something that I'm not sure about, and we can study further on with later on, but I really don't know. Any other questions? Nobody got one I can answer?
Well, I've got a question, but it's my same old question. Oh. You know what that is?
Yeah, go ahead, Virgil. Killing me, man.
Well, you got 2 or 3 million people. You got, divide that by 4, 5, or 6, and you got heads of house, and you got flocks, and time-wise and place-wise, how all these people bringing all this stuff, and it was offered by the high priest, that's one. How is this possible?
One altar. Yep, one altar. Best answer I can give you, I guess you had to make a reservation.
But they go on all day, every day?
Yep, I mean, that's the job of the priest, to take care of the sacrifices of the people. That's about all I know, Virgil. All right. That'll be the same answer you ask that question next time. Could be. I don't know. All right. We're out of time. Thanks for your questions, I think, and your comments. All right. God bless you.